just another technical problems we have to start now. This meeting is to get a report, annual report from Drug Free in preparations for our budgetary review and recommendation report, which we were supposed to have completed today, but because of unavailability, we have to meet with Drug Free today. The issue of boxing South Africa, I don't know. I've been phoned by the minister's advisor, indicating to me there are some problems. They won't make it. And I made it clear to him that they have to write a letter to the speaker and to the chief whip to explain. Because I've done everything which I could do. Even on Tuesday, when the department was here, I reminded them about Boxing South Africa and Drug Free, because they are entities which account to them and which get their money from them. So at the end of the day, I put the blame on them. But with those few words, I want to say, Chairperson of Drug Free, I think you can start. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of this committee, it, as always, it gives me great pleasure to present the 2011 annual report to this committee. Unlike Boxing South Africa, whenever we are called, we're always here, despite the committee secretary often changing the dates and the times of these meetings. I'd like to begin by thanking this committee for the unstinting support that this committee has given us over the years. In particular, I'd like to thank the Honourable Buthana Komphela for the support he's given us over the years. And the Honourable Cora, who's been a member of this committee for a long time, has also given us enormous support over the years, and we thank him for their support. And I'm sure I can thank the new members of this committee for their support in the future, so that we can continue to provide a platform which with sport in South Africa and indeed around the world can be played in a fair manner, in a safe manner, and clean of any drugs. I'd also like to thank the Minister of Sport for his support to the Institute for Drug Free Sport and for taking part in all of the campaigns that we recently have. I'd like to begin by introducing my team who will do the presentations today. I will give a headline of the annual report, just focusing on some critical and some strategic issues. And then I have with me the Chief Executive Officer of Drug Free Sport, Mr. Khalid Khaland, who will speak on some of the operational matters, and the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Bobby Saban, who will speak on the finances and response to the audit report from the Auditor General. We've had a very interesting year from Drug Free Sport, and I believe that we have delivered on our mandate entirely. There are five aspects or elements to our mandate in terms of the Act. The first is advocacy, awareness, and education around drugs in sport. The second is around testing, results management, prosecution, and finally, international cooperation. All these are critical elements in the work that we do. As far as advocacy is concerned, it's been one of the areas that we as Drug Free Sport have lagged behind for many years. But the last financial year, thanks to generous support from the department as well as from the National Lottery, we have been able to significantly scale up work in terms of our education, advocacy, and awareness. We've reached out to elite athletes, we've reached out to recreational athletes, we've reached out to schoolboys and schoolgirls who participate in sport. And importantly, we have ensured that the public has understood the work that we do and indeed support the work that we do. As far as testing is concerned, we've done 2,308 tests for the year in question, and we've had a significant increase of positive tests from 18 to 51. Now that is testimony to one of two things. One is the way in which drug-free sport has done its work, that we have become more effective and more efficient. Or secondly, that South African sport is doping more than it did previously. I think it's probably the former, that we have done more targeted testing. Our testing has been based on intelligence that we receive. And we've looked at high-risk sport and particularly targeted the high-risk sport. And that shows and that demonstrates that we've had a significant increase purely because of a rational utilization of resources. We didn't do any more tests. We did the same number of tests, but we got a significant increase in the number of positives just because we decided to use our money more efficiently. I also believe that counting the number of tests we do is a very poor surrogate of the actual efficiency of the work that we do. That needs to be judged on other measures. As far as results management is concerned, that has been ongoing and has worked very effectively. But importantly, as tribunals are concerned, one of the problems we set with in the past was that many of the tribunals, which were run in-house by national federations, did not give consistent sanctions against athletes. So, for example, and I just say this for argument's sake, rugby would give a lower sanction than athletics or swimming, for that matter. So in order to ensure that there's a fair allocation or there's fair sanction, it is independent, out of the hands of national federations, we as the Institute for Drug Free Sport have decided to institute independent tribunals that we run. So we prosecute and we have a tribunal which we establish, which is independent of national federation. That will ensure that the prosecution process is an independent process from national federations, so you don't get too many hometown decisions. And that has worked incredibly well, but it's also had a wonderful spin-off for us in the sense that we are building a pool of expertise in anti-doping law, which we didn't previously have in this country. So, you know, that's another area in which we have done exceptionally well. As far as international cooperation is concerned, we continue to cooperate with WADA and with national anti-doping organizations around the world and international federations. We do testing for them, they do testing for us, and we have a wonderful relationship in terms of education, in terms of results management, and that relationship hopefully will continue into the future. Because you cannot isolate anti-doping efforts in each country. This is an international effort. Drugs are moving across boundaries. Athletes are moving across boundaries. And therefore, it needs an international effort in order to enable us to do that. Some of the challenges that we've had, and the first challenge is the use of supplements, unregulated supplements. And that industry continues to be unregulated in this country, lack of quality control, and therefore there are far too many inadvertent positives from supplements. You know, we implore national government, Department of Health, and whoever the relevant authorities are, to begin to regulate this industry so that the public is not exposed to harmful substances, athletes are not exposed to prohibited substances, and so that we can have a more healthy community. So it's a public health issue that the supplement industry needs to be regulated, and that is an important element which we've raised time and time again with the authorities concerned. But there seems to be a lag on this matter, and we hope that hopefully with new legislation this can be controlled. The second issue that we have, a critical challenge that we have, is the issue around doping in schools. You know, we've seen the headlines in the newspapers in the last few months where large numbers of schoolboys are testing positive, particularly for anabolic steroids. Our experience at Craven Week this year, we had 5 athletes testing positive for anabolic steroids. So clearly, school rugby or school sport is another significant area of concern to us, and it's an area that we need to focus on. There are some impediments to our involvement in school, and that involves legislation, it involves jurisdiction, it involves sanctions, it involves policy. But it is something we're engaging schools in. We're engaging the schools so that they can have some kind of self-regulatory mechanism. And we're also speaking to the minister and the department to ensure that there's some mechanism created where we can deal with school sport. The other issue that is critical for us is legal issues. We feel that the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport Act is an act that has probably passed its sell-by date. The world of anti-doping is a dynamic environment that is constantly changing, and we need a significant review of the Drug-Free Sport Act, and we've put together a legal team to look at that. And once our legal team has come up with recommendations, the first place that we will come to with those recommendations is this committee. And then we will engage with this committee to look at drafting a new legislation or amendments to the current legislation, which will give us more power, and which will bring the South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport Act in line with similar acts around the country, around the world, such as the act in Australia and the one in the United Kingdom. Those are some of the challenges we face, and hopefully in the years to come we will engage with these issues. Finally, I present to you a report which is unqualified for all the existence of Institute for Drug-Free Sport. We've always had an unqualified report, and I'm proud to present an unqualified report to you again. I'm also proud to report that there is no wasteful or fruitless expenditure, except I believe fruitless and wasteful expenditure by the Auditor General, because they treat us like they treat a major entity like Arms Corps or somebody. We are a very small entity. They put enormous burden on us, and we as a small agency use taxpayers' money efficiently. But the impediments they put makes me think sometimes that they find issues in order to justify their own existence. In 1 year, we spent 7% of our budget paying it to the Auditor General for the work that they do. And 7%. We are a small entity. And what they kind of take us through in terms of doing the audit is unacceptable. And I implore the committee to do something about it, to bring the Auditor General to book, to say that they need to have some kind of format in which small entities such as ours can be audited at a far lower cost than we currently pay. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your support. I thank you for your attention. And I will hand over to the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Khalid Khalan, to present the operational report.
Thank you, Dr. Manager, honorable members. I'll take you through some highlights of our annual report, and then afterwards, the questions on performance you can direct towards me. Questions on financial matters, direct to Mr. Saban. For the year under review, 2010-2011, the agency had the same governance structure as the year before, the Board of Directors, Audit Committee, Internal Audit, and Executive Management. Highlights from our 2011 annual report, substantial increase in operational revenue, greater than 30% increase in revenue from 2009-2010-2011. The substantial part of that increase in revenue was spent on compliance, as Dr. Manjra mentioned, Auditor General fees, doping control, and education. And I'll come through, go through all these points in terms of what exactly it was spent on. Corporate governance, test planning, anti-doping education campaign, and strategic partnerships. Those are the highlights that I'm going to focus on in terms of our overview for the annual report. What I would like us to do is I've extracted the slide that we made, the promises and commitments we made to the portfolio committee last year. So I extracted that slide from our presentation on our annual report last year that we made. And when we asked for funding and the portfolio committee gave our support, you said we will support you in terms of your application for increased funding to the Department of Sport and to Treasury. We said this will be our priorities, compliance, anti-doping education, testing, and results management. So what I'm asking, or what I'm trying to show now is that we are accountable for the promises that we made, and we're going to go through how we followed through on that accountability. Compliance, as mentioned, I'm not going to rehash it, very expensive. Auditor General is one of the agency's biggest debtors. The external audit is performed by the AG, and again, we are presenting an unqualified audit report. There are always areas for improvement, and the Auditor General will always find areas, and rightly so, that we can improve. We never want to pat ourselves on the back and say that we're perfect. We can always improve for better compliance and for efficiency. And the points highlighted where we the areas for improvement, the process for how we report on our performance, and better application of our procurement process and policy. We went through substantial work during the year to improve and revise our supply chain management policies and a procurement process. And again, there is additional areas for improvement. It's not perfect, and we need to improve some of that. Those policies do, however, comply with the PFMA. We just need to be a bit more precise on how we comply with that. With the test planning, specifically the doping control, we did increase our testing. We didn't increase it substantially, but there were increases. We spoke last year about the athlete biological passport, blood testing, and steroid profiling that we rolled out and have been fairly successful in doing that. We have a number of athletes that we are tracking, some with suspicious cases, some that we thought were suspicious, and that turned out that there was no cause for suspicion. The expertise of our Doping Control Review Commission, which oversees the athlete biological passport, has been recognized internationally, and we were able to win a global contract to do the athlete biological passport for the International Triathlon Union, which is about 250 athletes worldwide, and it's quite a lucrative contract for us, so we are quite pleased on that. We changed the way we distribute our testing, not only with the sports code, but also the competitive level. And that also indicated the increase in the number of positive tests. Usually we spend a large amount of our distribution resources on the top tier levels of our sport. We're talking like national level, international level, whether it's cycling, rugby, Super 15, Springbok level, cricket, pro tier level. What we did in the past year, we just brought it down a bit, focused a bit more on the provincial level, on the under 21 level, on the under 19 level. And as you can see from our test results, that's where we caught quite a few of our athletes. Our partnership with the SAPS and or with the detective unit of the Medicines Control Council is also starting to show results, and that we utilize the intelligence information that they provide us on where steroid activity is happening to increase testing and to perform tests there. We're still working on it. It's a work in progress, but it's already starting to show early results. And I have to say the support from SAPS and Hawks have been quite amazing. Results management, Dr. Manjra mentioned that we have centralized the results management and taken that responsibility out of the national federations so that it can be more independent. What we did not anticipate is the skyrocketing cost of these results. On average, for one case, we're spending about 20,000 rand, whether it's a marijuana case, whether it's a steroid case. And what we part of the contributing costs are, we take the tribunal to the athlete so that the financial encumbrance is not on the athlete and the athlete is not prejudiced in terms of the right to a hearing. So in the cases where we've had boxes test positive for both for the range of substance, we've taken the hearing to them. So we've had quite a few hearings in places that we previously never had hearings, like in East London, Bloemfontein, those type of places. But again, the results management, the strategy that we've used is also starting to show results in terms of its independence. Anti-doping education, again, this is traditionally it's been an Achilles heel, but something we really wanted to get our hands around in terms of better getting our information out to the target audiences and also to package it better. And again, with the support of the lottery grant, which came very late in the financial year. So the performance that we're actually reporting on, it's some of it is planning and some of it is achieved, because the lottery grant, really, we only got the money in hand, the cash in hand, in April. And when I recall correctly, we did a presentation, and last year's presentation in March of this year, which was late, and Pori and I worked on that we can do it earlier this year, that we won't do it in March, at the end of the financial year. And I recall that I mentioned the issue of the delay or intransigence of the lottery establishment, and the portfolio committee promised that they would look into it, and I couriered the next day, delivered our lottery grant application. Ironically, a week and a half, there was a check in the account for my application. So again, whether it's coincidence or whether the committee applied pressure, either way, we're appreciative of that. And that has helped a lot in that we did a lot of planning and everything was ready to go. We were waiting for that to switch the green light on if the funding came through. And the focus was on sports supplements, steroids, stimulants, and you may have read in the newspaper the ubiquity of a new stimulant within the sports supplement products, methylexanamine. And if you'll see in our results, you'll see quite a few athletes tested positive for that. Diuretics. Diuretics is, just to explain it in layman's term, is a medicine that makes you, flushes your system. And it's starting to become more and more popular amongst our athletes as a substance. Usually you found it in boxers, wrestlers, because of the weight categories. Unfortunately, it's still popular in those sports, but it's also starting to show prevalence in other sports. It's also used to flush out steroids or other bad substances from your system. Outreach campaigns and school sports tournaments, that we stepped up tremendously this year. Again, it's about having a presence, an education presence, at the different school sports tournaments, at different school sports events. Irrespective of the sport code, whether it's swimming, rugby, water polo, rowing, boxing, we are out there. And again, thanks to the lottery grant. But this is, the lottery grant really, you know, started to get its effect in this current year, not in the year that we're reporting. But just to mention that we did a national outreach campaign around the country, a roadshow with boxing, and we'll report on that in the next annual report. Leveraging social media, many of you are familiar with how the younger generation communicate using social media, so we've leveraged that to get our message across, and we will be measuring whether that has been as effective as we think it is. Implementing the national awareness campaign, again, that implementation happened just after at the conclusion of this financial year. So the reporting more is on the planning on it. As I mentioned, we were just waiting for that lottery grant to be implemented. The strategic partnerships, this is part of our strategic plan, is how we leverage strategic partnerships to achieve certain objectives, whether it's in education, in doping control, or other objectives. An important one was our partnership and MOU with SASMA, the South African Sports Medicine Association. Again, we formed a task working team or a task group to develop a sports supplement position statement to give better guidance to our coaches, teachers, to our national federation on what approach you should have towards sports supplements and the use of sports supplements to minimize your risk. Our partnership with South African Rugby in terms of launching the I Play Fair campaign, South African Rugby brought financial contribution to the table, and also we had access to the infrastructure, and the campaign was launched with the Super 15 rugby team, and the former chairman of the portfolio committee was present with the launch and the premiere of the Free State at the campaign launch in Bloemfontein, at the Rugby match in Bloemfontein. The UCT and UWC law faculty, Dr. Mantra mentioned the outdatedness of the current drug-free sport law and re-looking at that. Last year we spoke, the questions were posed to me, why are you not testing more in the schools? Why are you not doing more drug testing in the schools? We had to really look at the Drug-Free Sport Act to see which how it gives us jurisdiction. We have to look at the Schools Act to see how the two can be combined. And we are at the point where we have a bit more comfort so that we will be able to propose to you amended or new legislation thanks to the partnership with UCT and UWC Law Faculty. I have to also mention that next week, flowing from that, we have our sports law seminars, the first sports law seminar, which will start introducing how we're going to go forward in the next year. We have sent an invitation to the portfolio committee. I know Pori has RSVP'd that he will attend the one in Cape Town. There are two. The one in Cape Town is Saturday the 29th at UCT, 9 o'clock. And the one in Johannesburg is Tuesday the 1st of November. Again, I would also urge other members of the committee to participate if at all possible, so that when we do bring you the proposed drafting for new legislation, that you are familiar with the context. The other strategic partnership, as always, is with the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. WADA met with us last year and requested that we assist with capacity building in Zone 6, which is the SADC countries. I think the zone is used from the AU or SADC. I'm not sure where the zone numbers come from. But anyway, it's the SADC countries in terms of helping to build at least a minimal infrastructure that these countries can also have some type of drug-free sport, the doping control infrastructure. It is not fair that when South Africa competes against the SADC countries, only the South African athletes are tested rigorously and the other athletes are not tested as rigorously. So we have helped with establishing a management framework, operational framework, and also training of field officers, doping control officers. That then led to Mozambique approaching SAGE to assist them with the All Africa Games that was held in September. We did a turnkey project from providing them with equipment, training, analysis, and when I say provide, I don't mean free of charge. It's another country. Obviously, we cannot use South African taxpayers' money to provide a service in Mozambique as much as we would like to. So the Mozambique government did pay for that service. Finally, the challenges for 2012, again, the testing in school remains an overarching challenge, not only because of the legislation, because of the volume of testing that's required. We do about 2,500 tests per annum, or in the last year, for all sports. That alone, 2,500 at the minimum, will have to be for all the schools. Remember, we cannot just be testing certain schools. Again, it's an equitable process. We can't just test a school at Rondebosch, Sachs, Afrikaans Boys. We have to have a plan that distributes it around the country, and we're looking at the minimum of 2,500 tests. And when you look at our financials, you can obviously see an addition, an increase of 2,500 tests, what financial impact that will have. Formalizing partnership with law enforcement. We've had excellent cooperations and meetings with the SAPS, Hawks, Interpol, the Medicines Control Council. The process where we're at, I've met with the Director Generals of Sport, and the protocol is for their peers, the Director Generals of Police and Health, to meet and open up that we can formalize cooperation on an operational level. So we are at that phase, and it's in the works, and I'm hoping to report more positively in this annual report to you about what developments we have. And then coming back to the draft legislation, the start of it will be the seminars next year. And I know legislation works in its own time clock. But again, once we can provide a good body of framework for the portfolio committee to take and to really engage with and come back to us. And obviously at some we are at the point that we have a good piece of legislation, we will have to meet with the portfolio committee to get more input and direct input from you on how to proceed on that. Further expanding the education campaign, we acknowledge and realize that we can never have too much education on our sports community. What we are looking at also is not only focusing on the sports community, but on the, not on the competitive sports community, but on the broader sports community, and rolling out our campaign more wider, that we also focus on the non-urban areas. We've had good success with the boxing education campaign, where we really went out of the urban areas, and we learned a lot of lessons learned and a lot of good feedback, so we are ready to roll out beyond the traditional urban areas. And then lastly, obviously, to continue to work on improving compliance and efficiency as an agency. Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline. I mean, just two elements on education program. And we realized that we were getting a significant number of positive tests from boxing. And a large number of those positive tests that arose from boxing was because of inadvertent doping, because people didn't know about the prohibited substances. So what we did is, in concert with Boxing South Africa, we had a program, an education and program, an awareness program for boxers. And we ran this program in the Eastern Cape, where a significant number of our boxers come from. So we're tailoring our education programs for the target audience, where we see a problem, where we see a lack of knowledge, and we're targeting our programs to that, those specific communities. Next week, or in 2 weeks' time, we are also hosting an educational seminar for the African region with the World Anti-Doping Agency. Again, trying to share our experience of education and training with the wider African community. Just coming back to the Auditor General's report, and I just echo Mr. Khalan's statement that there's certain areas of improvement. And in my criticism of the Auditor General, I don't deny that there's areas for improvement for us. So in terms of procurement policy, but largely in terms of performance reporting, I think that's a new area that the Auditor General is looking at, and it's an area that we're going to focus on, because performance reporting is something new. I think nobody's exactly sure in terms of how performance reporting is going to work, and how do you measure performance. So that's probably one area that we're going to focus on in the coming year, because I think that's a new area for us. And I think it's an important area, because you need to demonstrate efficiency. You need to demonstrate that your performance is commensurate with the budget that you get from the Department of Sport and Recreation, that you're using taxpayers' money efficiently. So clearly that's one area that we need to look at. Mr. Saban is here with us, so he doesn't have a formal presentation. You've got the annual report in front of you, and you've got the Auditor General's report. So we'll take any general questions or any specific questions related to financial matters.
Thank you, Traxley. Can we engage with the report members as we've got it? While you still paging through, can I just get clarity on these unregulated supplements? Who is supposed to regulate that one? That is the first question. The independent tribunal, are the federation cooperating? What is their cooperation on that one? Because you indicated that they had their own tribunals. And in educating one in boxing, you said that
you had a summit in London. But I think boxing is all over. You get it in Free State, you get it in Gauteng and what have you. I think the other people whom you need to involve in this education is the managers and the promoters of the boxers, so that they can also take a responsibility in terms of seeing that their athletes are aware and they are monitoring them. The testing at schools, you know, there are these Craven Weeks. There are these athletic tournaments and these others. So how do you go about testing there? Because to me, the ways drugs are being used at schools, really, 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 they might go to these events having used one or this other drug. How do you go about? If you go to a Craven Week, do you inform them, do you have to apply, or you just go there and do it at random? Can I stop there?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you for those very direct questions, which I think get to the crux of the challenges that we face. In terms of the supplements industry, part of the problem lies with nobody knows where the supplement industry actually lies. Whether it lies under food control or whether it lies under medicine control. So to me, it's in that gray zone where nobody wants to take responsibility for it. Because in most cases, or in the past, supplements has been touted as a food supplement. So then, if that is the case, then it should be regulated under the food industry, the food regulation. If it's a medication, then it falls under the Medicine Control Council. Now the challenge is that although it is marketed as a food supplement, which I believe it is, contained therein is medication, is drugs. So to me, I'm not sure where responsibility lies, but I would imagine that the responsibility lies between both food and medicines control. Now, I'm sure there's other areas of law which straddle two different departments. And, you know, I'm sure there's some kind of mechanism by which we can deal with this matter. And to me, because it contains potent drugs, my feeling is that the Medicines Control Council should regulate it. But so that's one of the challenges in terms of food supplements and where responsibility and jurisdiction lies in terms of controlling that industry. But it's something that definitely needs to be controlled, and I think that's something that we need to take forward. And probably call both parties to a meeting or a conference or a seminar and try and thresh this out and get to some kind of agreement. In terms of independent tribunals, you know, we've had fantastic support from the vast majority of federations, because there's a benefit to the federations that many of the federations do not have the capacity to set up these tribunals. And even from a funding point of view, some of the federations are very poor. They can't put together a competent tribunal. So Drug Free Sport takes over the competence bit, and we're taking over the cost. So, you know, many of the federations are fairly happy with it and are cooperating. The two federations are just where we're going to have a challenge, who have been jealously guarding this area, is football and rugby. So, but we've been engaging with rugby and we've been engaging in football, and hopefully we will have independent tribunals for these two sports as well. So currently the challenge lies with these two sports. Right. Only football. I think rugby is coming. The CEO tells me that rugby has come to the party. So currently we have a challenge with football, which is something we need to engage with them. Honorable Chair, I take your point about boxing, and my CEO has indicated to me that the seminars we had for boxers was all around the country, not only in East London, but all around the country, and we included managers and promoters as well, because we believe that in boxing, the managers and the promoters play a critical role. So we've included all of them in our training programs. As far as schools are concerned, again, you know, how do you target Craven Week? Now, to me, targeting Craven Week becomes easy for us, simply because Craven Week is held under the auspices of SARMP. So from a jurisdiction point of view, it's easy for us to get into Craven Week because SARMP manages it, and all the athletes who participate are signing that they will be doping controlled, etc. So Craven Week is very easy for us, and we test for a whole range of drugs at Craven Week. Even any athletics event that is held under the auspices of Athletics South Africa, it's easy for us to get in there. To me, the problem is when it is an event organized by schools. That's where the challenge is, because we've got no jurisdiction, these are minors, we don't have parental consent for it. So that's where the challenge lies. But as far as Craven Week is concerned, and any other major sporting event that's held under the auspices of a national federation, there's no challenge for us because we have jurisdiction over that area.
Honorable Sukan, Honorable Dalena. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the presentation made by the delegation. It's quite clear, it's quite good, it's appreciative. I think where we might have a problem is for us, all entities are regulated by law in terms of how to perform, including the treasurer regulations. And as such, I take your point when you say you do have a problem with the auditor general. But surely, we, as the committee, we can't take a fight to that level, this committee, because they are our entity also is part of the arm of government. But what we can always advise in the form of saying to the auditor general that if there are new formats or new approaches that you are introducing, please conduct some seminars for your clients so that they understand exactly beforehand, so that they understand exactly what you want to achieve, the output of your input thereof. So that you can do. I understand your fight because you want clean audits, and I think that is the view of government. So we can always advise the AG to say conduct seminars beforehand, so that your clients understand what you want to achieve. And as such, we will pronounce on that at an opportune time. But we take your concerns very seriously, because I can see that they are sitting very heavily on your chest. The other matter, Chairperson, in the AG's report, he did say that there is a 188,000 rands. Surely you are aware of that. What could be the cause that you did not follow the rules of the game? Because I don't want to use strong words, because your report is quite good. So I just want to check, why did you deviate from the just a clarity in that regard, so that we understand your deviation from the rules in terms of the PFMA and so on. Also, Chairperson, on the issue of the high-risk sport in your research, because it seems to me doping is taking toll in certain sporting codes. Yes, you find, I just want to hear, you do found those athletes or those sports persons that they have doped, and what is the recourse? I understand also you said you do flush them after some time, but the person who gave them sometimes might be aware because he's eager or she's eager to win. Is there any reprimand that you are doing on those people? Because I'm listening to your courts, independent courts that are doing these things. You might reprimand a player, but what about the person behind the player? Sometimes also the players do disclose to say, I've got this, and I was not aware. And the person who is aware, to what extent are you dealing with him or her in that regard, so that we don't reprimand only those that are supposed to be reprimanded. My last thing, Chairperson, in SADC. I understand that we are doing quite a good job in testing our players in South Africa, but in SADC you don't have a jurisdiction over them. Am I right? And if I'm right, how do you balance that with your own players vis-a-vis the SADC players? And yet maybe they come and they are not yet at your level. And I understand you are trying to have an infrastructure so that they also benefit from what you are doing. Now, how do you balance our players as against SADC countries' players if they are not conducting the testings and that you are doing in South Africa? Because that's a major concern for me. Chairperson, my last one, my last intake on this matter would be the improved athlete biological passport. You won the contract. It's a major contract that you have won because of your performance at an international level. I'm sure you are unable to disclose for what period the contract, the value of it, and so on. I'm not sure whether it's too Nicodemus that we might know. That can you please tell me then the two appeals that you have? You had two appeals, application that said have been filled. Applications. You had two applications, applications that said to have been filled. Are not clearly explained. Can you just explain to me this scenario? Because I just want to be clearer on those issues. Thank you, Chair. I might come back on the second round. Thank you, if there is.
Honorable Dagan.
Thank you for that. Well, there's two small questions that I wanted to pose. One question really is, how do we compare, by real, I mean South Africa, how do we compare with other countries where sport has become the business, really? For some of the problem of doping is a result of competitiveness of sport, but as an industry that you make money on. Because wherever there's money involved, surely people want to win, therefore doping would increase. And then how do we compare with other countries where sport really is at the highest level, as an industry, as a place for job creation generally. And then surely there are a lot of people, even professional people, who are involved in ensuring that people are doping. But how do we compare ourselves as South African in that situation? Yeah, but also I just felt that you should be having a very good working relationship with the Department of Education. I'm not sure of short course really. I've not been attending your meeting. I don't know how you operate. In general, because the real issue around the whole issue of public education, it wouldn't happen outside the context of education in our country. Because the real center where you can address some of these problems at the education level, whether the higher education or basic education at that level, I think it's very important for you to engage on that. Of course, I don't know how is your working relationship, because you are raising an issue that sometimes you are unable to deal with it, firstly because of legal issues, the young people who can't simply do that without parents agreeing. There are a lot of things, but surely the Department of Education at a basic level can play a very important role. Because then it's only when really we start addressing these issues. And this thing of, of course, I think it's not your first time, maybe you are raising the issue of you don't know where this food supplement falls in terms of departmental responsibility. And surely you should have raised this issue at a certain point. You know, what has been the response of government? Don't forget that there's one administration with various departments, but there's one administration. And therefore, these other departments, they overlap every department. There's no department that cannot work with other departments. Therefore, the issue that we are raising on that, of course, I think the experiences in America, food and fast track issues, how did it make proposal based on the empirical evidence would be difficult for any member of the committee to propose. And then I guess that we should move on that area with necessary speed. Because otherwise we will talk about this matter forever. This is a big problem. Members of parliament who make this decision must take a decision to ensure that they make it easy for us to work. Okay, but in terms of the broader issue, and is it really about whether you are, as you sit here today, do you think you are achieving your objectives? And then let alone really is a very good full detailed report for compliance. I think you are doing well there. But really it's more than that. I think that is the also objective that you are self-set. And then surely the board, because you are the board of directors, and it simply means that it's a very serious business that you are doing, therefore. You, despite the fact that you are subsidized sometimes by state, but generally a serious business. That's why there's a board of directors who got their own responsibility and judicial duties anyway to work on this matter. And how is your board performing? And that also the issue raised that I wanted just to raise. I just think that there are issues that we must raise. Sport is very important, and in terms of broader issues that we have raised, but also it's very important just to ensure that people stay healthy, not just really for competitive nature, but for people to be healthy, really, to be healthy living, they will need a lot of support and encouragement. And then I thought that the doping issue is a bigger problem somewhere. I think I'm not sure that we have engaged with the football leadership and what is the attitude on this. Surely it should be in the interest of football leadership, really, not to have players who can be compromised because of doping. And I'm not sure whether we have engaged with them in terms of their clarity, what is the attitude towards this, and also what makes them to resent getting involved with your organization. I think it's important for us. And then, because when we meet with them, at least we meet with them with some clarity. What are the issues that we should address with them? And those are issues that I wanted to ask you.
Okay,
Honorable Chair, can I answer these questions and then move on to the next round? Because there's lots of issues. Thank you, Honorable Members, for those very, very challenging questions. And I'm going to get, before I ask my colleagues here to answer the more specific questions, I think the question that the Honorable Member asked, and to me that's a critical question, is are we meeting our objectives? And it's a question that I ask myself time and time and time again. And to me, I summarize the mandate of the South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport in two areas. The one area is deterrence, and the second area is detection and prosecution. So, are we winning the hearts and minds of the South African public and of athletes? Are we winning the battle where we want to prevent youth and we want to prevent athletes from doping? So that's the deterrence. We want to stop them from doing it. My sense is, and my own experience and speaking with athletes, is that the deterrence effect certainly works. Athletes are conscious, and you can get a sense from the therapeutic use exemptions, the number of phone calls we get from athletes, can I take this medication, can I take that medication, that there's a sense that there's an awareness that they don't want to get caught out doping. So I think the campaigns we have, and now we've got new tools, telephonic tools, so if an athlete is taking a drug, you just use the phone application and you can see whether the drug is prohibited or not. It gives me a sense that the deterrent effect is certainly working. But we recognize there's going to be a group of athletes, regardless of what you do, they're still going to dope. Because of the point you made earlier that there's an economic incentive to doping. Those athletes, the only way we can get through to them is through detection and prosecution. And I think the fact that we've had such a significant increase in the number of positive tests gives me the assurance that yes, I think in terms of detection, we are making an impact. We may not be winning the war, but I think the battle is being won slowly. That we're significantly getting a larger and larger number of positive tests, which gives me an indication that what we're doing is right. That we're not doing more of the same, but we're changing the paradigm. We're not just going and saying, let's test across all sport and just go and do random testing, but the targeted and the focused testing we're doing, we're just giving so much more thought to the intelligence that we receive, to the how we categorize a sport. So clearly, I think on both fronts, in terms of deterrence, detection and prosecution, my sense is that, yes, I think we're achieving our objectives. But clearly, I think it's for you to judge and for the sporting community to finally judge us. And if you think we're not doing our job, you need to come to us and say, I think you're not doing your job, because you are our customers at the end of the day. The public is our customers that we need to deliver to this public. So we will take criticism from wherever it comes, because I think we're there to improve our performance. Which brings me to the next point about the Auditor General. That we feel that the Auditor General in this country is an institution which is fundamental to democracy, which is fundamental to good governance, which is fundamental to ensure that taxpayers' money is appropriately spent, that there's no corruption, there's no wasteful and fruitless expenditure. I agree entirely. And I believe that an institute must be audited and must be stringently audited. The point I'm making is, don't treat us, and this is a plea not from Drug-Free Sport, but it's a plea from all the small entities, that they're treating us the way they treat major entities. They don't have a framework to audit smaller entities. And we're saying the cost burden for us is unreasonable. Yeah. So to me, that's the critical issue. It's not an issue that we're saying that we don't want to audit the general. We want to audit the general, but let's be rational about what we do. And I take your point that, and exactly the point we had, when they introduce new pieces of policy for audit, but they don't inform us about it. And then we don't do it, and then they penalize us on it. So you're absolutely correct that when there's something new, have a seminar for entities and inform them of what's going on. So to me, that's a critical issue. The third broad issue I want to deal with, and that is the SADC countries. Now, why is it important for us to operate in SADC? And you know, sometimes we need to spend money doing testing in SADC as well. And the reason for that is simple. That if we only test South African athletes, and athletes from other parts of the world or other parts of the continent are not being tested, and they're doping, they've got an unfair advantage over our athletes. So by testing our athletes, we're actually penalizing our athletes. So we need to ensure that the playing field is level, that all of the SADC countries do testing to the same level and as stringent as we do testing in our country. Now, what have we done? We've got what we call the RADO, the Regional Anti-Doping Organization, and we're providing expertise to the RADOs to ensure that they come to the level that we do so that they can test. Now, they haven't come to that level yet because their governments are not willing to put the resources that our government is putting into anti-doping. So that's a challenge that we face. But it's a battle that we need to fight, and sometimes we need to put resources to ensure that the SADC countries are tested as well. And I'll give you an example from my experiences internationally. The Americans have told me that they're willing to put money to ensure that the Jamaican athletes are being tested. Why? Because they're saying that we want to level the playing field. You know, because they believe that the Jamaicans are doping, and that's why in track and field, the Americans are not dominant anymore. So the Americans are willing to put money to ensure that there's a solid program in Jamaica. Now, similarly for us, we need to ensure that our athletes are fairly treated to ensure that we put money into SADC countries. Although, it's South African taxpayers' money, it's in the interest of South Africa at the end of the day to ensure that they have stringent programs as well. In terms of athlete and support staff, the World Anti-Doping Code recognizes that sanctions can be imposed on the athlete, and sanctions can be imposed all the support staff, the medical staff, the coaching staff, the managers, other athletes. So whoever is involved in the chain of supply for drugs can be prosecuted. What do we do? There's two things we do. One is when we have a tribunal and we're prosecuting an athlete, there's a clause in the World Anti-Doping Code where we give them an opt-out clause, where we will significantly reduce the sanction of that athlete should they be willing to give us information which would lead to the prosecution of others who are involved in the supply chain. So we're giving them a way out, and we're saying, we don't want to target athletes. We want to target the supply chain. We want to get to the producers, we want to get to the suppliers, not the one athlete. So we give them that. The second thing we've also introduced recently is we've got a counseling service. So should an athlete test positive and is prosecuted, we offer them counseling at our cost, because our intention at the end of the day is to rehabilitate athletes, not to penalize them, to rehabilitate them so that they come back into society and they realize and they become part of our program to try and educate and train other athletes around this issue. So we've got that issue as well. And which brings me to the issue around schools. That, you know, in terms of schools, our intention is not to go in there and test. Our intention is to go in there and educate athletes, to educate the students so that they come out as better citizens. Mm-hmm. It's about fair play. It's about no drugs. It's about honesty. It's about, you know, integrity. That's the values we want to teach the school children. We don't want to go and test. We will test as a deterrence, but primarily it's about focusing on ethical values so that they come out as ethical sportsperson, but more importantly, as ethical citizens of our country. Those are some of the broad issues I've spoken about. The CEO will speak to some of the more specific issues. And, Bobby, do you want to come in on 188,000 Rand?
Yes. Honorable Chair, the question posed on the nature of our irregular expenditure. If you review our annual report, one, we do not have any fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Under regular expenditure, it was deemed irregular expenditure on an administrative non-compliance, i.e. three quotes. Understanding that our entity, the size, we do not have a procurement unit. We do not have a treasury function, but we are still trying to comply. The actual amount spent in that, when the audit that commenced, we were told that we have in excess of 2.5 million rands worth of expenditure that is irregular. The very debates entered into to try to explain that we are trying to comply within a framework with the restrictions that we do have, we managed to get that literally on the day of the audit that we signed off from 2.5 million to 188,000. And if I can break the 188,000 down, it's really in two areas. One, specialist services, where we've got only one standard setter that can come do work at Rugby Sport. We cannot get three quotes. On our multimedia launch, we had two quotes, and we had one service provider that was disqualified. They didn't deem the third one that was disqualified as the third quote, and hence, because we wanted to get our financials signed, we had accepted under duress the 188,000. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does it answer the question of the 188,000 rand? Okay, thank you. It was an administrative. It was purely administrative.
Just to follow up on the Honourable Member Suta's comment on the recourse to sports personnel, this year we will be reporting on it within the next month. The decision is just being finalized. It will be our first decision and sanction against a non-playing athlete, and for the sanction will be for supply and trafficking of steroids. So that information will be released within the next few weeks once the decision is concluded. The sanction and the charge was against a coach supplying an underage athlete who tested positive for a banned substance. So we have applied that part of the law. In terms of the international contract that you asked, it's for a two-year period, and it's 150,000 per year. So it's 300,000 for the period. The appeals, the appeal is the Gertes case, which is lodged by WADA, and it's a case being heard by the Court of Arbitration in Switzerland, and it stems from 2005. We had tested positive for nandrolone at the Seoul Marathon, and he's still going through that process. The second appeal has concluded. It's the Vaughan van der Asveld case, where WADA appealed the sanction that the tribunal handed down of a warning, and the appeal overturned the warning to a three-month sanction against Paul Faleaswell, and that was also released to the press about a month ago. The other member's question on working with the Department of Education, ironically, the honorable member right next to you posed that question. in last year, and I think for the last 2 years, has constantly posed the question on working with the Department of Education. And the, if I recall correctly, the Honourable Member also mentioned that he was part of working and encouraging the Department of Sport and the Department of Education to resolve the issue of who takes responsibility for sport, in terms of school sport, sorry, between Department of Education and Department of Sport. We work with the Department of Sport. We work closely and with the person or the people in the Department of Sport responsible for education. We haven't really got involved in terms of the fight over jurisdiction between Department of Sport and Department of Education. And so once that is resolved in terms of a memorandum of agreement, we'll be able to move forward in a more decisive manner. In terms of the sports supplements, I think we've answered that. It is a grey area.
Just to add to that, the entity we've been engaging with as far as sports supplements is concerned is the Medicines Control Council, and we've been engaging with them simply because we feel that there's scheduled substances which fall under the regulation of the Medicines Control Council which are contained in the supplements. So therefore, it should be their jurisdiction. But again, the Medicines Control Council is not willing to take responsibility for it. But it's a battle we continue to fight.
Next week in our sports law seminars, we will again be addressing the issue of sports supplements in terms of our own drafting, our own new legislation. And ironically, the Medicine Control Act is fairly weak. What is stronger, and what we will be discussing next week, is the Consumer Protection Act. Actually gives one more teeth in terms of regulating sports supplements. But again, that will be discussed or debated next week. And I think we've addressed most of the question.
Thank you, Honorable Musi, Honorable Suka, Honorable Ishiva, and that's...
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, gentlemen, for the wonderful report you have presented. My question is on capacity. I see on page 23 that the Therapeutic Use Exemption Committee has got only two members, the two doctors. Now the question is, do they cope? Is it enough? Or do you have other members of the committee who are not mentioned in here, in this page? And then on the same page, Chairperson, it's a question of why other codes such as cycling, swimming, rowing and rugby have such a high number of total twos denied. The committee would like to know the reason. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my only two questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question and the others are just, I see in your sport projects, sport law project, you are engaged with the UCT and the UWC. Can you just explain to me about other tertiary institutions? What is your relationship at that level? Or is it because in terms of the proximity? Easy for you to reach, but in terms of the principle, well, what is your stance on that? Chairperson, penultimate one, I just want to commend the board under good governance. If you've got a board of directors that are consistent for a period of time, you are able to overcome and to understand one another, to overcome those challenges, and I could see that the entity here has got a board that has been there since the previous financial year. That's why their challenges are becoming lesser and lesser, and those that they are administratively, and those that they are encountering are conventional challenges on a day-to-day basis. Your partnership with SAPS is very amazing, as you said. Can I just check with you, or you are still improving your partnership or your relationship with education? finalized agreement between yourself and these departments so that we are clear what we are talking about. It should not be a quasi thing or a gentleman's agreement. Rather, it should be a regulatory agreement by law. Fortunately, we do have a gentleman from the Department of Sports. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my three questions.
Melly Silva.
Thank you, Chairperson. My other question I've already covered, but my colleague. My first question is just a small Anyana question. I just want to know if you have got offices for this doping control in all the provinces. The second one is on the procurement management. I just want a clarity on the issue of the award that were made to the suppliers who did not submit their declaration on whether they are employed by the state or connected to any person employed by the state as per the requirement of Treasury's regulation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Silver. Thank you very much. In terms of, I'll just respond to the first questions on the therapeutic use exemption, and I'll get Khalid and Bubi to respond to the others. Now, a therapeutic use exemption is the use of a medication which is prohibited, and the athlete would apply to the institute to enable them to use that drug under specific circumstances. Now, what happened previously is that the TUE is largely determined by the prohibited list. So the more drugs and more kind of commonly used drugs you have on a prohibited list, the more TUEs you receive. So, for example, if we have asthma drugs, which are commonly used on the prohibited list, there's a large percentage of the population that has asthma, and therefore we're going to get lots of applications for asthma, for TUEs. Now, what's happened over the last 2 years, thankfully, is that the World Anti-Doping Agency has begun to remove some of this medication from the prohibited list. So that has significantly reduced the amount of work that the TUE committee had to do. So what we did is previously we used to have a larger TUE committee, but because many of these commonly used drugs are being removed, and this year even more were removed, it's becoming much easier, and next year even more will be removed, it's making the work of the TUE committee much easier, because then you're only getting fewer applications for therapeutic use exemptions. So the people we've got currently are coping well, because what happens is that administratively the office does the bulk of the work in terms of processing the TUEs, ensuring they're in a correct format, and then the two doctors we have who've got tremendous experience in anti-doping merely look at it and determine whether it's acceptable or not. Now the reason that we would accept or reject a TUE, and the reason we reject it in some cases, is that we would only accept a TUE, firstly, if it's used for a legitimate medical purpose. Secondly, there is no alternative to that drug. And thirdly, it must not give you an advantage over and above restoring your state to the normal level. So you mustn't get an added advantage. So those are the three criteria for granting a therapeutic use exemption. And if they don't meet those three criteria, then we would reject it. So when you see rejections, that's the reason it's being rejected.
Thank you.
The member also had a question on the capacity, why only two members. The international standard for TUEs require a minimum of two members. From an affordability perspective, we've gone with the minimum of three members, and those members do co-opt other not members, but other medical expertise where required. So we don't, like in the bigger countries where they will have 4 to 6 people with the various expertise, and you have to pay these people, we just do it on a co-opting so that our costs are better maintained. Comrade Sukha's, Honourable Members Sukha's comment on the sports law, on the sports law project with UCT and UWC. I think it has to do with a bit of proximity, but also just familiarity with those faculties and people in there. With the sports law seminars, we have members of the faculties that we've invited from KwaZulu-Natal, University of Pretoria, and WITS to participate. So they do form. Or the other entities that we know are also part of it. What we've particularly looked at is those with a sports law capacity. Partnership with SABS. Yes, right now it is a bit of a gentleman's agreement, and my meetings a month ago with the Department of Sport is that we are moving now towards MOUs because we need to do more work on an operational level, and the only way that I can engage with some of the detectives and those in the Hawks and SABS and Medicine Control Council is that there is an MOU so that the superiors know that they that we are allowed to cooperate. The honourable member at the back asked about DC, the doping control offices in all the provinces. Yes, we have distribution of doping control offices in all our provinces, all our 9 provinces from the north, from Polokwane to the east. But again, the majority of them are going to be again biased towards the urban cores. Urban cities where most of the sports events occur, or where most of our athletes are residing. Then the question about the suppliers connected to the state that is related to the Treasury Note SBD4. None of our suppliers are, as far as we know, that after the finding by the Auditor General when we started implementing SBD4 Treasury Note, none of our suppliers have any family or familial relations with the agency or are employed by the state. Thank you.
It's a matter of clarity on 2 issues. One is we don't have officers in various provinces, but we've got doping control officers. So we've only got 1 office, and the head office is based in Cape Town. And we've got doping control officers and coordinators in all of the provinces where we work. And the annual report's got a breakdown of all the doping control officers in the various provinces. My colleague spoke about SPD4, which is about the suppliers declaring that they don't have any relationship with anybody as part of the, you know, in the institution. It is something we've been penalized about, but it's, again, the point I made earlier is something we were completely unaware about. We didn't even know it was a Treasury note. So, again, it was something which wasn't transmitted to us, was not forwarded to us. We didn't know it was a necessary part of the procurement process. And we had engaged with Treasury around this matter, and Treasury had acknowledged that they hadn't distributed this effectively. So, yet we were penalized on it. But when the Auditor General came in, they did an active search to determine whether any of our suppliers were related, and they couldn't come up with any. So clearly we were given a clean bill on that.
Yes, 1, 2 small announcements from me. Can you indicate to me what is the gender presentation on your board? I don't want the university to ask me why did I not ask that question. And then, some of the comments of the AG, about leadership. The AG's comment here is the performance information was reviewed by internal audit before year end. However, the lack of performance targets against which to measure the results in 59% of the indicators was not addressed. Financial and performance management. Management and staff involved in the procurement process were not aware of all the relevant supply chain management requirements, including the practice notes that are regularly updated. Management did not design adequate controls to mitigate the risk of non-compliance with supply chain regulations management. Management did not implement the control related to procurement as designed by to prevent irregular expenditure. Ken, what's your comment on that? The annual report was not submitted
in timely manner, in a timely manner, resulted in audit reporting being issued as a draft.
Honourable Chair, I will answer two questions. The first one is around the makeup of the board.
Yes.
If you look at the board attendance register on page 16, clearly we've had non-performance by some board members, and this was brought to the attention of the minister because we felt that the board was not functioning adequately because of the non-performance of certain board members.
How many members did not?
We brought it to the attention of the minister that two board members were not performing. The one board member was Professor Ojiwoli, and the second board member was Dr. Harold Adams. The minister, in his wisdom, decided to relieve Professor Ojiwoli of his responsibilities on the board. This was Minister Kofile. And Dr. Harold Adams, they retained him, although he hasn't attended a single meeting for the entire year, without apology. The other board member we've got who's attended one out of three meetings is Ms. Nombeliso in Tanjana, who's quite busy. When she is there, she contributes significantly to the board, but she's quite busy in terms of other responsibilities she has, and therefore she hasn't been attending as frequently as we would like. As a result, the minister has appointed three new board members. Minister Mbalula has appointed three new board members. Two of those board members are female, which will bring up the number of members, of female members on the board to three. So, any
out of?
Out of 10.
Yes.
Pertaining to the questions or the comments from the Auditor General, again, we acknowledge those findings from the Auditor General as areas for improvement.
Just one more note on performance. I mean, you know, in order for the Department of Sport and Recreation to release our grant, or the tranche of money that they give us, we've got to provide them with a performance report in terms of the objectives and our performance against objectives, which we do regularly. And the board has a view. The board has a view of that, and the board is satisfied that, in terms of the stated objectives we've had, that we are meeting the stated objectives. So we may not have the numbers that the Auditor General is looking for, but we're broadly happy as a board that the stated objectives of these institutions are being met. And I believe that the Department of Sport and Recreation is happy with that, and hence the release of the funding to the institution. But clearly the requirements of the Auditor General are much more strict, and therefore, you know, we're looking at performance measures and performance monitoring, so that we in future we can report on that. And with that, I'd like to welcome the Honourable Member Lee. I've been missing him in this meeting.
No, that's my job. You are chairperson of the board.
I accept your
No, but you can't come late and take over the meeting, please. If there are no more, can you switch off Comrade Lucy? I don't think that thing is land, it's a camera. No. If there are no more questions, oh, Babu Fadavid.
Not really a question, it's just, it was mentioned, I always ask the questions about schools and so on. It's actually disturbing the fact that more and more drug cases are from schools. And I know most of the tournaments are run currently not really by the Department of Education, but more in conjunction with the case of rugby, from SA Rugby side. So isn't it possible from that side to get more involved in the, especially with rugby, schools rugby, because it's becoming a problem, the amount of cases that's been caught out in the rugby on schools. So that's my only question.
You know, I mean, again, on You know, I think one of the federations that's shown the greatest commitment to anti-doping in this country is rugby.
Mm.
You know, rugby not only shows the commitment to us in other ways, but they also give us money to do additional testing. So from rugby's perspective, they're very committed to rooting out doping in schools rugby in particular. And wherever we have an opportunity where a tournament is held under the jurisdiction of SA Rugby, we go there. And not only do we test, but we run a full education and awareness program. So, you know, as far as most of the sport are concerned now, we don't do testing without an education and awareness program. And lest I give an inappropriate impression, we test in soccer as much as we test in any other sport. So football hasn't blocked us from testing, so we test. Cricket, we test. Cricket is another federation that gives us additional money over and above what the government grant gives us to do additional testing in cricket. So we've got lots of support from cricket and from rugby. Soccer has promised us more money, but they've never given us a cent. So there's two issues we've got about as far as soccer is concerned. The first is that we've been trying to engage the PSL for a number of years to try and get an education and awareness program going among all of the players. But we've hit a blank wall. They've engaged us, we've met with them, but there's just no follow-up. The second one is around the tribunals, which I met previously. So as far as testing is concerned, we continue to test in soccer. But it's the issues around awareness and education, and the second issue is around independent tribunals outside of SAFA's jurisdiction. I wouldn't mention SAFA's jurisdiction, but outside of an independent tribunal that still follows the FIFA and the SAFA rules, but not constituted by SAFA. So those are the two areas of concern. Sorry, I just want to make one more point. In terms of doping in schools, you know, I think the one important point is that doping in schools is not only about sport. It's about looking better. It's about performance. It's about looking better. You know, it's about people looking better, having bigger muscles and that kind of thing. So it's about image enhancement as much as performance enhancement. So to me, it's fine. So we test in rugby or we test in sports events, but there's a huge population of learners using anabolic steroids in schools just to look better.
Honourable Lee,
Chairperson, I hear that SAFA. You know, it's difficult to get a sort of financial support from them. Getting some financial support from the other codes, it helps us sort of to keep that sport clean. Now, what could happen with SAFA, with soccer? You know, you'll be embarrassed internationally if you cannot really do the job on the side. Now, if you kissed, the test, let's say I want to test a soccer player, a South African soccer player. Now, he's also, when he takes part in international competition, he's also tested there. You test on the side there, they test on their side. So, if SAFA does not support Chairperson, then there is the possibility that we could be embarrassed internationally.
Yeah, no. I think we are going to raise it to SAFA. We are going to meet with SAFA in the future. We're just working out that one. And I think that we definitely have to raise it. This campaign of yours, in order to respond, but I think it's proper you had it with rugby. I play fair. I think you have to see where you can fit it in with SAFA and cricket as well. Because the way cricket is growing now, I'm telling you, there are not sufficient pitches in the country. If there are no more questions, then I want to thank you, Chairperson, and your team, Mr. Matala. But Mr. Matala, a message to the department. Boxing South Africa is not here. And that is why you are here. Now, I've raised this thing with the acting DG. I think a week or two ago. Because this thing
it was clear that there are problems with Boxing South Africa. There were indications that they might not make it because of this or that. And then I requested the acting DG on Tuesday, saying to her, this is the cut-off date. On Tuesday, we need to look at the, what is this called? At the BRR. We need to look at the draft. Now, when we look at that draft, there'll be nothing about boxing, because boxing was not here. And I don't want to go to hell for lying to Parliament. So, you must go and raise it that you are very, very unhappy about what has happened. Corinne, you want to say something because I'm closing now. I see your hand. Or are you waving to somebody?
I wanted to augment what you are saying, sir.
Don't just say it then.
No, it is an anomaly for a entity not to come during the oversight period, where a report of a committee is expected to be tabled in Parliament, and yet the entity is expected also to be assisted financially through this committee for not having come and account on what, how they spent those funds. It's a serious indictment. I don't take it very light because it undermines democracy. Thank you, Chair.
And no apology has been submitted. I was phoned this morning by Mr. Fuzani raising these issues. But on that note, let me release you. Members, thank you for coming to this meeting. I know it is difficult. Some of us are having connecting flights, and if you miss it, then it means you'll be without your grandchildren, Melishiva. So I'm happy that we finished in time. But there is that one thing which I want members to look at over the couple of days, so that we can also adopt the report. If you can recall that we had a meeting with all the boxing promoters, managers, and that, what is this boxer name?
Fana.
Now, we then instructed the department to meet with all those stakeholders we were mentioned. They have, and they've completed the report. And I think Pori has given that report to all members. Please read it, and so that on Tuesday we can adopt it, and so that we can hand it over. With those few words, the sports law seminar. Comrade Pori, or the CEO of this committee, requests that members submit their names to him who are interested to attend. When is this sports seminar for it? 29th September. 29th September? Yes, yes. Yeah. No, I'm asking real, when is it? 29th October next week. It's not next year. So please, if you can attend, we'll appreciate that. So on that note, the meeting is declared, see, to be. Yeah. So Tata is the dojo, which I said that.
Because this other member, this level B, level B, what is the SCP, I'm going to go to the hospital.
Grazie.